for the $2. "I wasn't to know there really is a dragon of unhappiness," said Dibbler.
"I don't think there was until you convinced him that one exists," said William.
Dibbler brightened a little.
"Ah, well, say what you like. I've always been good at selling ideas. Can I convince you of the idea that a sausage and a bun is what you desire at this time?"
"Actually, I've really got to get this along to—" William began, and then said, "Did you hear someone shout?"
"I've got some cold pork pies, too, somewhere," said Dibbler, ferreting in his tray. "I can give you a convincingly bargain price on—"
"I'm sure I heard something," said William.
Dibbler cocked an ear.
"Sort of like a rumbling," he said.
"Yes."
They stared into the slowly rolling clouds that filled Broadway, which became, quite suddenly, a huge tarpaulin-covered cart moving unstoppably and very fast. And the last thing William remembered, before something flew out of the night and smacked him between the eyes, was someone shouting, "Stop the press!" The rumour, having been pinned to the page by William's pen like a butterfly to a cork, didn't come to the ears of some people, because they had other, darker things on their mind. Their rowboat slid through the hissing waters of the River Ank, which closed behind it slowly. Two men were bent over the oars. The third sat in the pointy end. Occasionally he spoke. He said things like,
"My nose itches."
"You'll just have to wait till we get there," said one of the rowers.
"You could let me out again. It really itches."
"We let you out when we stopped for supper.
It didn't itch then."
The other rower said,
"Shall I hit him alongside the ing-head with the ing-oar again, Mr. Pin?"
"Good idea, Mr. Tulip." There was a dull thump in the darkness.
"Ow!"
"Now, no more fuss, friend. Otherwise Mr. Tulip will lose his temper."
"To ing-right."
There was a sound like an industrial pump.
"Hey, go easy on that stuff, why don't you?"
"Ain't killed me yet, Mr. Pin."
The boat oozed to a halt alongside a tiny, little-used landing stage. The tall figure who had so recently been the focus of Mr. Pin's attention was bundled ashore and hustled down an alley. A moment later, there was a sound of a carriage rolling away into the night. It would seem quite impossible, on such a mucky night, that there could have been anyone to witness this scene. But there was. The universe requires everything to be observed, lest it cease to exist. A figure shuffled out from the shadows of the alley close by. There was a smaller shape wobbling uncertainly by its side. Both of them watched the departing coach as it disappeared into the snow. The smaller of the two figures said,
"Well, well, well, there's a thing. Man all bundled up and hooded. An interesting thing, eh?"
The taller figure nodded. It wore a huge old greatcoat, several sizes too big, and a felt hat that had been reshaped by time and weather into a soft cone that overhung the wearer's head.
"Scrap it," it said. "Thatch and trouser. I blew it the grawny man. I told him. Millennium and shrimp, bugger it."
After a pause, it reached into its pocket and produced a sausage, which it broke into two pieces. One bit disappeared under the hat, and the other was tossed to the smaller figure, who was doing most of the talking, or at least most of the coherent talking.
"Looks like a dirty deed to me,"
said the smaller figure, which had four legs. The sausage was consumed in silence. Then the pair set off into the night again. In the same way that a pigeon can't walk without bobbing its head, the taller figure appeared unable to move without a sort of low-key, random mumbling.
"I told them. Millennium and shrimp, I said. Oh, no, but they only run out. I told them. Sodom doorsteps, I said. Teeth. What's the name of age? I said, I told them. Not my fault, matter of fact. Matter of fact stands to reason."
The rumour did come to his ears later on, but by then he was part of it. As for Mr. Pin and Mr. Tulip, all that need be known about them at this point is that they are the kind of people who call you friend. People like that aren't friendly. William opened his eyes. "I've gone blind," he thought. Then he moved the blanket. And then the pain hit him. It was a sharp and insistent sort of pain centred right over the eyes. He reached up gingerly. There seemed to be some bruising and what felt like a dent in the flesh, if not the bone. He sat up. He was in a sloping-ceilinged room. A bit of grubby snow crusted the bottom of a small window. Apart from the bed, which was just a mattress and a blanket, the room was unfurnished. A thump shook the building. Dust drifted down from the ceiling.